are Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's up and welcome to another Monday edition of Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts. I'm your Monday host, Jackson Gatlin, also host of Locked On Rockets right here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, we'll be chatting with Philip Rossman-Reich from Locked On Magic as the Orlando Magic shockingly draft Paolo Banchero number one overall, despite all the signs and buildup suggesting that they would take Jabari Smith Jr. Was Banchero the right selection for Orlando? Then we chat with Matt George from Locked On Kings as the Sacramento Kings select Keegan Murray fourth overall in this year's NBA draft. What makes Murray the right guy for the Sacramento Kings? How does he make life easier for De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis? Lastly, we go to Kuka Hill from Locked On Pistons, arguably the winners of NBA draft night as Detroit comes away with Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren to pair with Cade Cunningham. Do the Pistons have one of the best young cores in the NBA now? Today's episode is brought to you by Bet Online. Bet Online has you covered the season with more props, odds, and lines than ever before. Bet Online, it's where the game starts. As always, we appreciate you so much for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is Philip Rossman-Reich from Locked On Magic. You can follow on Twitter at @PhilipRR_OMD. Philip, if you would have told us, you and I respectively, a week ago that we'd be sitting here and you would be the one talking about Paolo Banchero going to your team, the Orlando Magic, at number one overall, and I would be talking about Jabari Smith Jr. wearing Rockets red going number three overall, we both probably would have looked at the other and said, yeah, you're crazy. And yet here we are, Paolo Banchero going number one overall in this year's NBA draft, one of the most like covert pre-draft processes ever if you're the Orlando Magic, and a crazy 24 hours leading up to the draft where we saw the winds of change swirling. We saw all the rumors that Paolo could go number one. I dug my heels in and said, nope, Banchero's still going to fall to three at the Rockets. You dug your heels in and said that Jabari was still the guy at number one. And here we are. Walk me through that crazy like lead up to the draft and then the moment that Paolo was selected number one overall.
Yeah, it was wild. I mean, like as you kind of alluded to, like if you would have told me the Magic ended up on draft night with Paolo Banchero and the Rockets ended up with Jabari Smith, I would have asked you how many draft picks did the Rockets send Orlando's way? Did we end up with Kenyon Martin Jr. in the process? It was a wild 24 hours, you know, with the even like the betting lines changing the way that they change and how dramatically they seem to change. And I kept saying like this really feels like a bunch of bettors just kind of saw that there was some value in Paolo Banchero. And then there was sort of a run on the bank, so to speak, where a lot of money was just coming on him. And I didn't really read much to it. And a lot of it was because of things that I was hearing and seeing here in Orlando. You know, an NBA source told me that the Magic were scheduled to work out Paolo Banchero the Sunday before the draft, you know, at some point, during the week leading into that. And then all of a sudden that workout was canceled. And it just didn't feel like the Magic are going to be able to get him in. And it's not that the Magic haven't drafted guys who didn't work out for them before, but especially having the number one pick, having so much control, you know, being able to pick who they want to get, a guy not coming in for a workout or a guy not kind of like getting the free agent treatment coming to town seemed very, very, very strange and very, very weird. It was just a generally weird weekend. And so every sign that I had, every kind of sense that I got from what the Magic, from how the Magic were acting, pointed to Jabari Smith Jr. And that's probably what they wanted us all to think. For whatever reason, whether it was trying to convince a team to trade up and get Paolo or make another team think that, you know, they were gonna take the guy and they could get the guy that they actually wanted, Paolo Banchero, later in the draft. The Magic really just kind of played their cards very, very close to the vest. They let everyone else kind of fill the narrative. They did their work. And, you know, at the end of the day, you had the number one pick, you get the guy that you really wanted. And I guess Paolo Banchero was that guy.
Yeah. I mean, from every impression that I got here in Houston, you know, echoing this similar sentiments as your own, is just the Rockets were very much ready for Paolo Banchero at number three. And then when things broke the way that they did, you know, they're in the fortuitous position of you just get whichever one of the three is left. So instead of having your choice at number one, the way the Magic did, the Rockets just lucked out with Chet Holmgren going number two and then Jabari Smith all the way down at number three. But let's focus here on Paolo Banchero, because Philip, what does getting a guy of Paolo Banchero's caliber mean for the Orlando Magic?
I mean, it means everything. You know, I've been kind of like going through the stats and everything. My kind of least favorite stat, but my most interesting Magic fact that I have like ready in my back pocket is the Orlando Magic have not had a non-center average 20 points per game or more since Steve Francis back in 2005. You know, it's a stat that I trotted out there a lot in arguing for why Paolo Banchero should be the number one pick for the Magic, because Orlando just does not have a great history of wing players. And I consider Paolo Banchero to be kind of a modern four, kind of a wing based player. They have just not had a lot of guys who can put the ball on the floor and get you a basket in that way. You know, I've kind of been thinking about it. You know, Paolo Banchero might be the best kind of one-on-one basketball player the Magic have had since Tracy McGrady, you know, with all due respect to Steve Francis, you know, since that time. So for nearly 20 years now, since 2005, the Magic traded Steve Francis in 2006. It's been a long time since Orlando has had a dominant scoring presence that wasn't a Dwight Howard, that wasn't a Shaquille O'Neal. You know, Nikola Vucevic, you know, is a certain type of player. They have not had this kind of player in a very, very long time. And, you know, we were talking about this before we started recording. Sometimes you overthink things. Basketball is a very simple game. Can you get the ball in the basket? Can you make a shot? Can you get to the rim? Can you put pressure on the defense that way? That's probably even getting too complicated. Paolo Banchero is a scorer. And I think that's what the Magic ultimately determined that they needed. They needed a guy who could be a primary scorer and could fit and fill that role very, very quickly.
And in some of our previous discussions, you know, you and I have talked about this, the fact that back during the lottery phase of this whole pre-draft process, when we found out Orlando was going to be the number one overall selection, so many people were automatically like drafting up Jabari to Orlando. And I was kind of sitting there thinking, well, Paolo to Orlando makes kind of a lot of sense, because at the top of the draft, you have a couple guys who are maybe more so ancillary pieces in Jabari Smith and Chet Holmgren, who are going to fill amazing roles for their respective teams. And then you've got kind of the bucket getters, right, in Paolo Banchero and Jaden Ivey, guys who you put the ball in their hands and they're going to go get you buckets or create offense for their respective teams. And that's exactly the type of guy that the Magic, you know, got their hands on now with that number one overall selection, which kind of leads me to this next question here, Philip, is does Paolo just automatically become the number one option, the number one guy in Orlando? Or is there maybe going to be some, you know, fighting over the pecking order? Or how do you envision this kind of starting once he eventually hits the floor?
I mean, I think obviously everything is earned. So, you know, I think you could come into any season with an idea of how things are going to be. But, you know, Paolo Banchero's got to go out there and prove that he can be that number one scoring option. I think obviously you draft Paolo Banchero, and this is what I felt like throughout the draft process. If you believe Paolo Banchero can be your 20-point-a-game night, you know, 20 point per game night, you know, plus, you know, or whatever, that's the guy you draft. You know, I certainly, as I sat more with the tape, kind of began to doubt that a little bit. And that's maybe why I moved off of him in the pre-draft process. But the Magic clearly believe in him to be able to do that. You draft Paolo Banchero to be your primary scorer. He's the kind of player that puts other players in the right role. I would argue that's been one of the Magic's biggest problems. They've had a lot of really good players over the last decade, whether it's Tobias Harris, whether it's Nikola Vucevic, whether it's, you know, even Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon, Victor Oladipo. They've had quality talent that they haven't been able to put together. And part of that is because everyone's just kind of playing the wrong role. Guys are being asked to do too much. There's maybe too many mouths to feed with a lot of young players. And I think that'll be an issue for the Magic moving forward. But if Paolo Banchero can establish himself as that primary scorer, as, you know, a pick and roll option with Markelle Fultz, someone who could do a little bit of things off the ball, but be that primary guy, then everyone else's role starts to make a whole lot more sense. And everyone starts to understand, okay, this is where I fit into this team, or this is my role on the team. This is what's going to make our team successful. There's going to be some trial and error. Obviously, this is a young team. There's a lot of guys trying to prove themselves still. But I think that the Magic do envision Paolo Banchero taking on that role and taking it on fairly quickly.
Look, it's going to be probably a few years before we have, you know, a definitive answer to this question I'm about to ask you, Philip. But right now, gut reaction, was taking Paolo Banchero number one overall instead of Jabari Smith Jr. the right move at this point in time for this Magic organization?
You know, I think if they believe that he can be a 20 point per game a night guy, if they believe he can be the primary scorer, that they can build an offense around, and not just a good offense, let's just get straight to it, a championship level offense, he is 100% the right pick. I said this before the draft process, or said this during the draft process. Paolo Banchero's game is the one that screams star to me. Like, he does the things that you expect star players to do. The question I think that followed Paolo around is, you know, can he grow his playmaking, which everyone seems to think that he can, to make others around him better? Can he extend out to three-point line? Can he add that defensive element to be a two-way player, which they certainly showed signs of, but he also showed plenty of signs that the defensive effort wasn't always there. He would even admit that his attention to detail on defense, especially when he gets tired, kind of went on and off throughout his year at Duke. But if all those elements are there, Paolo Banchero is the most NBA ready, the guy that I think can make the most immediate impact and still grow and get a whole lot better. If he can't reach that level, I think there'll be a lot of questions, because there's a lot of guys in this league who are 20 point per game a night guys, but they don't make their teams better. They don't lead to winning. And so it can't just be about raw numbers. It has to be about winning and building a winning franchise and winning organization. That's obviously a goal that the Magic have.
Was Paolo Banchero the right pick for the Orlando Magic? We're going to find out not so far along in the distant future. We got Vegas Summer League coming up right around the corner, and the very first game of Summer League will be between the Orlando Magic and the Houston Rockets. Paolo Banchero, Jabari Smith Jr. going head-to-head. For that, be sure to follow Philip. He's going to keep you up to date with all of that over at Locked On Magic. Philip, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Thanks for having me on, Jackson.
Coming up, the Sacramento Kings selected Keegan Murray fourth overall in this year's NBA draft. What makes Murray the right guy for the Sacramento Kings? How does he make life easier for De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis? But first, a quick message from our friends over at BetOnline, because BetOnline.net is your number one source for all of your betting needs and sports info. Find the latest sports developments, league reviews, and news, including NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, and much, much more. BetOnline is your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, including live betting, esports, scores, and NBA futures. And right now you can take a look at who the odds-on favorite is for the NBA Rookie of the Year next season. Right now, Paolo Banchero, the favorite at plus 300. Jabari Smith Jr. coming in second at plus 350. And then Chet Holmgren, a distant third at plus 575. You got Jaden Ivey at plus 650. And then rounding out the top five, Keegan Murray at plus 900 to be the NBA Rookie of the Year. So for all of that and more, be sure to head to the website today or use your mobile device to learn about the trends and action available to you. BetOnline.net is the fastest and easiest way to check in on all your favorite sports and events. They've got MMA, UFC, boxing, golf, you name it, they've got it over at BetOnline. So head over to their website, check it out today. BetOnline, it's where the game starts. And continuing on here at Locked On NBA Monday, as always, we appreciate you for making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is Matt George from Locked On Kings. You can follow on Twitter at Matt George SAC. Now, Matt, the Kings selecting Keegan Murray fourth overall in this year's NBA draft. A little bit of divisiveness about this pick, possibly. Let's start first and foremost. What to you makes Murray the right guy for Sacramento at number four?
Well, he checks all the boxes for what the Sacramento Kings need. The Kings need floor spacing next to De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis. Check. The Kings need someone with a high basketball IQ who can come in and make an immediate impact of helping this team accomplish their goal of making the playoffs right away. Check. And the Kings need help defensively. Now, I don't think Keegan Murray is going to be considered the best defensive player in the draft by any means, but he's someone who knows how to hold his own on the defensive end of the floor. The Kings are a dreadful defensive team, and on one hand, they could try and improve by getting a bunch of really good individual defenders on this team. But in reality, when your two best players are also not known for their defense, well, you have to try and find a way to bring in players who can complement them, and you can ultimately build a solid team defensive system. And Keegan Murray helps with that. So you could have the fit argument. Keegan Murray makes sense. You could have the best player available argument. Keegan Murray makes sense. A lot of people get hung up on the highest ceiling argument, but that's something I personally can live with.
Okay. And I think one of the reasons that this pick was maybe a bit of a head scratcher for some people is because there was a lot of speculation that, you know, if Keegan Murray was the guy for Sacramento, why not, you know, trade back, right? Trade down, recoup an additional asset or something and select him, you know, a little bit lower down, right? Fifth, sixth, or seventh, possibly. to your best knowledge, is that something that Sacramento attempted to try and do, was trying to trade back down a little bit, and it just didn't ultimately pan out that way? Or just kind of what was their philosophy going into draft night with that fourth overall pick?
Well, the Kings, as far as I understand, they explored all of their options to see if such a path was available to them. One thing that I disagree with that you said, and I know you're being generic, not necessarily sharing your opinion, Keegan Murray wasn't going to be there past five. Like, people need to get this idea out of their head that Keegan Murray was going to be available at six or seven. If Sacramento did not take Keegan Murray at four, if they had taken Jaden Ivey, the Pistons were going to take Keegan Murray. There were two teams that were interested in trading up to four that weren't named the Detroit Pistons. That's the Indiana Pacers and the San Antonio Spurs. Both of them wanted to move up to four because they wanted to draft Keegan Murray, and they had a feeling that he wasn't going to get there past four, wasn't going to fall to them. So I get a little frustrated with, and I've talked about this a lot with Sacramento Kings fans here in Sacramento, like, this is real life. It's not NBA 2K. You have to have two to tango in order to work out a trade. You can't just say, well, this trade makes sense for us, so we're going to force them to accept it. The right deal has to be out there for both sides. And the reality was, there wasn't the right deal where the Sacramento Kings could move back and still land their guy in Keegan Murray. And clearly, there wasn't a deal good enough for them to not take Keegan Murray altogether. There wasn't enough value out there for the Kings to say this deal is more worth it to us than not drafting Keegan Murray, who they feel almost unanimously, or according to general manager Monty McNair, the front office felt unanimously that Keegan Murray is a better player and has a better future than Jaden Ivey does.
Yeah, and you mentioned that earlier, kind of talking about, you know, the ceiling criticisms of Keegan Murray, right? So what would be your pushback to the argument that Keegan Murray doesn't have as high of a ceiling as Jaden Ivey, and that's the direction that the Kings should have gone if you're trying to find, you know, the BPA best player available type pick?
Well, the best player available type pick is Keegan Murray. Like, the best player available right now is Keegan Murray. The numbers support that. How he's going to be able to come in and make an immediate impact because of his age supports that. Now, I'm not saying the gap is massive, just like I don't think the gap is massive between Jaden Ivey's higher ceiling than Keegan Murray. The reality is, people fall in love with the flash. They fall in love with the flair, the athleticism that Jaden Ivey possesses. It impressed me too. We've seen those highlight dunks. We've seen those highlight reels. We see the comparisons to John Morant or to Donovan Mitchell, right? I get why, and this is also a guards league, and Jaden Ivey is considered the best guard in this draft class, and I think rightfully so. But Keegan Murray is very sound fundamentally. He's a good all-around basketball player. I understand people say, what does Keegan Murray do? There's not one thing that Keegan Murray does that is phenomenal, superstar level. I actually agree with that. But the Kings need a well-rounded basketball player who can help them in multiple different facets. And the reality is, De'Aaron Fox is still on this roster. The Kings are looking at De'Aaron Fox to take them as far as they're going to go. Jaden Ivey, in so many ways, is a copy of De'Aaron Fox. The Kings just dealt with an experiment that failed with De'Aaron Fox and Tyrese Haliburton trying to work together. In all ways, or in all arguments, Keegan Murray was the right pick for Sacramento, at least in my opinion.
So how does Keegan Murray then, when we look at this current Sacramento Kings roster, how does Keegan Murray factor into the rest of the front court of this Kings roster with Sabonis, with Barnes, with Rashawn Holmes? Like where is his spot in this roster going to be, to your best guess, you know, opening night?
Well, for one thing, Jackson, this roster better not look on opening night like it does right now. And I think Monty McNair and the Kings are aware of that. That's where also a lot of frustration from Sacramento Kings fans and Sacramento media came with the draft night, is the Kings left draft night with Keegan Murray, but that's it. I mean, they traded their 47th pick. I think it was the 47th pick for the rights to Sasha Vujacic, I think is how you pronounce his name. He's a European player who's 26 years old. There's no inclination at all if he's going to come and join the Kings or not. Theoretically, he is a player and plays a position that the Sacramento Kings could use. But I mean, I don't understand why the Cavaliers would just give his rights away for a second round pick if they felt ultimately confident that one of the top European players is just going to come over to the NBA. So I have no idea how that's going to work out. But in reality, it was a pretty quiet draft night for Sacramento, especially considering all the rumors, all the fireworks. Hey, the Kings could trade. There's so many teams that are interested in Jaden Ivey. To ultimately just pick the guy you want and let the rest of the draft play out the way that it did, it's kind of quiet. And that frustrated some people because they know that the Kings need to improve their roster. But to answer your question, Keegan Murray is a night one starter on this Kings team, unless somehow they go out and find the perfect starting four next to Domantas Sabonis, which I don't think is out there realistically. And even if they did, they'd probably have to trade Harrison Barnes to get it, and then you're probably starting Keegan Murray at the three, which I don't think is his natural NBA position. I think Keegan Murray on opening night is going to start right next to Domantas Sabonis on offensively. He doesn't have to do too much. He can space the floor, take advantage of catch and shoot opportunities. If there's ever smaller guys that are switched onto him, we see his ability to score in the post. And then defensively, the Kings as a whole need an overhaul defensively, but I expect whatever they're going to try and do under new head coach Mike Brown, that Keegan Murray and everybody will be able to fill their roles in that new defensive system.
I'm glad you brought up Mike Brown there, because that's what I wanted to follow up with is just, I'm curious, how much influence do you think Mike Brown even had over this selection? I know it's kind of, you know, interesting. You're bringing in a brand new head coach. He's currently, you know, coaching on the bench in the finals. Like, how does that factor into the entire pre-draft process, do you think, for the Kings?
Well, first and foremost, from what I understand, is Keegan Murray is a guy that Sacramento wanted pretty much the entire process. And then when they moved up to four, they realized, okay, there's little to no chance that we're not going to have the opportunity to take him. At seven, I think they were as concerned as I was that Keegan Murray wasn't going to be there at seven, and rightfully so. I actually asked this question to Kings general manager Monty McNair at Keegan's press conference yesterday. I asked him, I said, like, we haven't been able to talk to Coach Mike Brown yet. How does he feel about the pick? How does he feel about Keegan Murray's versatility? You can play him in so many different positions and use him in so many different ways. And the first thing McNair brought up was the fact that Mike was kind of kept in the loop during the playoff and during the NBA Finals process. Mike was very committed to the Golden State Warriors, and naturally so, easy for me to say. He was trying to make sure that he got another ring and finished his business there in Golden State. But while that was happening, he did share with us at one point in his press conference that during a day off after a travel day, he came over to Sacramento and had some meetings with some players and meetings with the Kings. And during those meetings, Sacramento told him about Keegan Murray, expressed their interest in Keegan Murray, showed him highlights and things like that, scouting reports, workouts, and kind of slowly brought him on board. So it didn't sound like Keegan Murray was necessarily Mike Brown's pick all the way. I don't know if there was a Mike Brown pick all the way. I don't think he was interested in the draft. He was focusing on the playoffs at that point. But the Kings definitely won Mike Brown over and had his seal of approval in drafting Murray.
How does Keegan Murray's future look in Sacramento? How does he help benefit guys like De'Aaron Fox and Domantas Sabonis? You're going to have us covered for all of that and more over at Locked On Kings. Matt, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On NBA with me.
Always a pleasure, Jackson. Good to see you.
Coming up, the Detroit Pistons came away with Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren in this year's NBA draft. Were they the winners of this year's NBA draft? And do they have one of the best young cores in the NBA now? But first, quick message from our friends over at rockauto.com, because with the ever-increasing number of makes and models, it's basically impossible for your local chain auto parts store to stock all the parts that you could possibly need. Save time and money when using rockauto.com. Why choose to spend 30, 50, or even 100% more for the exact same parts from a chain store or car dealership? Look, best of all, rockauto.com is a family business. They've been serving do-it-yourselfers online for over 20 years. They've got everything you could possibly need, from brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even brand new carpet. The prices are always reliable, though, for every single customer. They don't price gouge you just because you're a DIY person who knows how to do some, you know, minor repairs yourself. And that's how it should be, right? You shouldn't have to pay more. Go explore their easy-to-use website today to find the solution to your auto parts needs. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. And this is the really important part. When you go to checkout, be sure to write Locked On in their How Did You Hear About Us box so that they know that we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. Be sure to visit rockauto.com. And final segment here at Locked On NBA Monday. As always, appreciate you making Locked On NBA your first listen each and every day. Joining us now is Ku Cahill from Locked On Pistons. You can follow on Twitter at Ku Cahill. Now, Ku, I'd love to sit here and tell you that the Houston Rockets had the best draft of the night, but I can't. I don't think I can, because I think the Pistons actually came away with the number one, like, I guess, haul from this past draft night. You walk away with Jaden Ivey at pick number 5, Troy Reaver trading for Jalen Duren with the 13th selection. I mean, let's start with Jaden Ivey here first, Koo. Were you expecting Ivey at five? And, you know, how do you like his fit in Detroit? And what does it mean to add a guy like that as the backcourt running mate for Cade Cunningham for hopefully years to come?
So over the last few weeks, I did think that Jaden Ivey probably was going to be the pick at five because it sounded like the Sacramento Kings really wanted to get Keegan Murray. And they really like, they were obviously sitting four. The only scenario in which I didn't think Jaden Ivey actually would fall to the Pistons if someone traded up with Sacramento to four. But those worries kind of left me because I feel like the Kings probably knew that if they traded back, if Jaden Ivey wasn't there at five, the Pistons would take Keegan Murray from them. So they were kind of trapped, in my opinion, at that four spot and were forced to take Keegan Murray at four, which kind of took away all doubts for the Pistons to get Jaden Ivey at five, which seemed to be Troy Reaver's guy all along. Jaden Ivey is going to be fantastic with the Pistons, man. An explosive athlete, a guy that the Pistons just haven't had. Cade's exceptional, but they haven't had like an explosive athlete like that from one of their main players in a long time. I mean, I guess you could say, even though he was kind of wore down a little bit, Blake, but Blake wasn't really that explosive when he was here in 18-19. But they've lacked that for a long time, and Jaden Ivey's going to bring that. He grew up in the Detroit area, so he has a bunch of family ties here as well. So it's really a great fit, and everyone's excited to have him.
Didn't they? They did like a special like jersey presentation for Jaden Ivey, right? Well, what was that all about?
So his father played, I believe, in a high school. He played high school here. I forget what school it was. I think it was Cass Tech he played. His mother played for the Detroit Shock when they were still in the WNBA. And then his grandfather, I believe, played for the Lions as well. So they gave him a jersey from each one of those with their names on the back.
Oh, wow. So a special moment for Jaden Ivey, I'm sure. So how exactly does Jaden Ivey, like, they'll both kind of make life easier on each other, right? Jaden Ivey's going to make things easier for Cade. Cade's going to make things easier for him. How exactly does that work for that duo?
I mean, there was a video surfacing. I kind of like went all over the place on Twitter that, if a video, Cade getting double the top of the key, swinging a corner pass to Saben Lee, who ends up getting blocked at the rim. Cade Cunningham creating those type of advantages for Jaden Ivey, that's probably going to be a poster dunk or a guy just moving out of his way and letting it be a normal dunk. Like, guys aren't going to be trying to do that with Jaden Ivey. So that's easy. That's the simplest way right there. When Cade gets doubled, or he goes on a driving kick and he creates an advantage on a guy for a possible drive off of a driving kick, Jaden Ivey's probably going to be the most capable one on the roster now to take advantage of that. And that's something they really lacked last season from anyone on the roster. No one could really take advantage of the advantages that Cade were creating for him off of these driving kicks. So Jaden Ivey, I think, is going to love playing with Cade. And just simply, Jaden Ivey's going to help Cade because he's going to take some of that stress off of him offensively. Offensively, Cade was asked to do basically everything for the Pistons this past season. So with Jaden Ivey here, I know he has to improve a ton on ball, kind of in the in-between area as well. That's where he has to grow as a player. But just having a guy who's able to take some of that off your shoulders and try to develop that area, and someone the staff's going to trust to try to take some of that that burden off of Cade, really going to help Cade kind of last throughout a season, last throughout a game, so on and so forth.
Well, not only did the Pistons add a new backcourt running mate for Cade Cunningham, they anchored the middle a little bit more with a really enticing big man prospect in Jalen Duren. First, Koo, walk me through just the reaction to the move. You know, Troy Weaver in his bag, dealing a future first to be able to pick up a prospect as good as Jalen Duren. What was going through your mind when that happened?
So that trade, I don't know if you know this or if you were there, but like, when Woj and Shams tweeted it, they both tweeted two different things. Shams said that Durant was going to the Knicks, and then Woj said he's going to the Pistons. I was sitting here looking at the phone for like 5 minutes waiting to see one of them correct each other, and they just didn't say nothing. I had to wait for Jake. I think it was Jake Fisher or someone else ended up coming out and being like, hey, oh no, it was Mark Stein. I think Mark Stein came out and said, yeah, he's going to the Pistons. I'm like, okay, that's great. But over the last few weeks, we actually talked about it a lot over the Pistons community. It was rumors saying that Gordon Hayward, the Charlotte Hornets are going to want to attach one of their 13 or 15 picks to move off of him. So the idea when we heard this trade go off, it was like, okay, so the Pistons must be absorbing Gordon Hayward's contract for 13, which is $30 million. And that's a hefty contract, but I mean, if you're going after your guy at 13, then I can somewhat understand it. Then the news comes out, it's like, no, it's not for a $30 million contract. It's for a $9 million expiring contract in Kemba Walker. So now you're talking about a $21 million difference in year one and a $51 million difference in like year two. You're dealing with, like, it was just an exceptional move by Troy Reaver to make. on draft night, and it went way better than we all thought. We thought that there was a chance that he would get 13, but we thought it would be for a bigger contract for a longer time period. And it turns out it was just an expiring $9 million contract for Kemba Walker, which is going to eventually get bought out by the Pistons. So it was a fantastic deal by Torrey Weaver.
And how do you like Jalen Duren as a prospect, the idea of him, you know, kind of playing in the middle, both offensively and defensively for this Pistons squad?
So I believe he's the youngest player coming out this year. I think he actually might be the youngest player in the NBA. I think I saw that is the case. So he's going to have time to grow, but right out the gate, an explosive lob threat, a guy who's going to be able to catch lobs and just throw down some big time dunks. That's something the Pistons desperately needed last year up until they traded for Marvin Bagley. They didn't have a vertical threat, a lob threat, any kind of threat really inside to put pressure on the rim at all, because Isaiah Stewart just can't do that. And it really destroyed their offense. So Duren's going to be able to do that, and he's going to bring a pick-and-roll threat and a pick-and-roll partner for Cade, for Jaden Ivey, for Killian Hayes. That's something they desperately needed, something I really wanted to make sure they addressed in this offseason, so I was happy about that. And defensively, it's probably going to be a little bit of a work in progress. He's 18 years old. He's very young. Defense is usually where rookies struggle the most coming out of college into the NBA. So I just want to see flashes of him being able to protect the rim, see if he can hold his own in wherever pick and roll coverage they want to put him out there for. But really, the most enticing thing about him is definitely his threat offensively as a pick and roll lob threat, a guy who has shown potential to be able to hit a mid range jumper, a 3-point shot sometime in his career. But really, just having that vertical threat for Cade, Jaden, and Killian is going to be a big time thing.
You mentioned his name there a moment ago, Isaiah Stewart. What does the addition of Jalen Duren mean for the future of Isaiah Stewart? Is this a situation where these two guys can maybe coexist, or is it going to have to eventually be one over the other?
So I think it sounds like that they might be willing to try them at 4 and 5 at some point this season. I am one of the biggest non-believers in Isaiah Stewart at the 4, so I think that would absolutely go horrifically. But I don't think that his arrival should mean anything for either of them. I've always said that I think Isaiah Stewart's ceiling is like as a high-quality backup center, which I think is fine. And even if he isn't, if you want to start Isaiah Stewart, again, Jalen Duren is very young. He has a long road to learn the NBA, especially defensively. So I think either one of them can start or come off the bench. It would be fine. I think what it does do, though, is probably take the Pistons out of the DeAndre Ayton running. I think that probably ends it right there. But those two guys, I think they're fine to be on the roster together, whether they're starting, one coming off the bench, or if they want, for some reason, tried them at 4 and 5.
Yeah, maybe no more DeAndre Ayton sweepstakes for Detroit, but they do still have, what, north of $30 million in cap space to kind of play around with, since they didn't wind up having to absorb a contract like Gordon Hayward. So, Koo, what's your best expectation for how the Pistons, you know, approach free agency this summer and, you know, what targets they may actually be interested in pursuing?
So I think the most interesting one going on right now is Miles Bridges. And I know there's been some reports from James Edwards of The Athletic and some of the beat writers saying that the Pistons may just forego doing any kind of big signings, just run it back basically with this young core, let them develop another season and just improve a little bit on the outside, get maybe some 8, 9, 10 guys in the rotation in free agency and just, you know, don't spend a lot of your money. But now it seems like some noise going on with Miles Bridges. One of Miles Bridges' boys or his trainer posted a picture on Instagram today, actually saying Charlotte Barrett paid the bag and we're going to Detroit. Ashton is a trainer for Cade, Cade Cunningham's trainer and his cousin. Ashton's very vocal in the Pistons community, and he's been talking nonstop about how they're recruiting Miles Bridges. I don't know if that's tampering or not, but I mean, I guess it's not, since it's not technically Cade. But he's been constantly trying to recruit Miles Bridges, and there's been some back and forth between people in both camps talking about possibly Miles Bridges returning to a place where he went to college at Michigan State. So I could see that maybe happening, but I think the most likely scenario is the Pistons simply kind of run it back next year, keep this core together and make sure they don't get anybody that's going to block any big minutes for this young core of Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Killian Hayes, Sadiq Bey, Zaire Stewart, Duren, and Isaiah Livers. I think they do that and then just kind of replace some of their team option guys, Ahmadou Diallo and Frank Jackson, with, I don't know, maybe like a Gary Harris type or Lonnie Walker's type, all like lower key free agents, and just try again next year or 2 years down the line when it's more favorable for them to spend money.
What does the future of Detroit Pistons basketball look like with Jaden Ivey joining Cade Cunningham in the backcourt along with the rest of the exciting young Pistons core? What are they going to do in free agency? Of course, you're going to have us covered for all that and more over at Locked On Pistons. Koo, I appreciate you stopping by Locked On the NBA with me.
Yes, sir. Appreciate you having me.
That's going to do it for another Monday edition of Locked On NBA. As always, thank you so much for checking out the show. If you haven't done so yet, please consider subscribing wherever you listen to your podcast. That's Apple, Spotify, Google, the Odyssey app, free and available on all platforms. Also, be sure to check us out on YouTube. Go to YouTube, search Locked On NBA, like, comment, subscribe, all that good stuff. But as always, thank you so much for listening, and we look forward to having you back right here at Locked On NBA, the biggest stories with the local experts.